The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for StockEd. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. Today we're off to South Africa with West Wits Mining. Code is WWI. Last traded at 1.5 cents for a market cap of 36.5 million. And we've had West Wits on the show previously, and it's all in the name here. West Wits Mining gives us the clue that it's on the fabled Witwatersrand Basin over there in South Africa, the source of 22% of the total gold ever produced, around 1.5 billion ounces. And West Wits has its foot on one of the five regions that make up the fabled Wits belt there. And it's got 4.28 million ounces of gold under its belt in the resource category, measured and indicated, about half of that. So it's got plenty of gold. It's now at the financing stage. And to bring us up to speed on just how that's going, we have Michael Quillett with us today. Michael's the chairman. G'day, Michael. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Barry. Thanks for having us.
Now, Michael, you've been beavering away over there. I think there was an updated DFS last year, and which pointed to a potential from the Qualia Shallows to produce 924,000 ounces of gold over 17 years at sub $900 an ounce, a very attractive project, but no project without financing. How's that going?
Well, it's moving forward, Barry, as you say. I mean, it's a very attractive project on the numbers. It's a modest project in terms of size, so we're starting small and moving to big. So, you know, we're looking ultimately to go to a 200,000 ounce production, but this DFS is showing us going to 70,000 on stage one. So putting the funding together, that is taking some time, but it's moving positively now. And I think we're engaged with over 10 parties. A couple of them have been announced because they've signed expressions of interest. So we've been able to announce that, but there's many others in the data room under NDAs. And we think we're moving towards a final solution on that soon.
And importantly, I think the Industrial Development Corp of South Africa is on board with an expression of interest.
Yeah, they're a very strong participant. I mean, they're very widely well respected. They've been around about 80 or 90 years, the IDC. Most other people in the industry, particularly around Africa, take a lot of notice of their process. And we're sort of well advanced now into our due diligence with the IDC. I think they started in earnest in February after signing an expression last year. And they put a whole team onto it. You know, we've hosted two full days at the office and at the mine site a few weeks ago with about eight or nine people from the IDC there. And we've had further follow-up meetings with them, and it's progressing quite strongly, I think.
And I dare say, Michael, it helps that the gold price is at record levels.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. I mean, the DFS there was done on a gold price assumption of 1850. So sitting there this morning at something over 2250, I think last time I looked, it's incentivizing the market, and it's also improving our fundamental metrics all the time. I mean, you know, with our gold price and also the exchange rate, the Rand has weakened, which improves our cost base. So really, if you look at our sort of metrics as released in the DFS, they've substantially improved since then. So our cost of, our peak funding requirement comes down substantially. Our payback period comes in a lot. You know, those things are, you don't recalculate them every day, but the DFS release does have tables and it's showing the variances and the sensitivities to those things, and the project is improving all the time.
We're talking about Qualia Shallows. That was, I'm just wondering what sort of developments required to get it into production?
Well, not much. You know, one, we called it Qualia Shallows and put the word shallows in so people weren't put off by South Africa, which has a reputation for deep mining. I mean, this is starting at level two because, believe it or not, after 100 years or more of mining, the Kimberley Reef has been left in situ to surface, basically. What we've done, we've spent about 10 million Aussie on it in 21, 22, and we've actually refurbished an old adit to take modern equipment. The mine is ready to go. We actually had it up and running and extracting some ore in 2022. We stopped in April of that year because we were trying to finalise a toll treat agreement, which took longer than we expected. And now we're sort of trying to finalise the funding to go to the full development mode. But in terms of starting, once we get the funding signed off, the mine will be in production in 6 to 8 weeks, and it will be then stockpiling ore for about 5 to 6 months to build the stockpile up to about 30,000 tonnes, which is the ideal quantity for us to start delivering to the plant. So this mine will be, in production of ore within 6 to 8 weeks, but will be, they're processing the ore within 6 months of starting. So it's most of the preparatory work has been done.
There you are, of course, just 15 kilometres west of Johannesburg. Johannesburg has its issues like any big city, but I was just wondering, how important is a project like this to that part of the world?
Oh, it's very well received, and that's probably the principal reason why the IDC are enthusiastic. When we get to full production, we'll be supporting, something like 900 to 1,000 full-time jobs. And the area is, we're adjacent to Soweto, we're adjacent to Rudaport. These are areas that historically have a lot of mining history and people with expertise that at the moment, those expertise are sort of being sent all over Africa to run other projects, and having the option of being able to operate in their traditional backyard is something that the locals are very keen to see as well. So I think there's a lot of local support. We have a lot of community engagement, and we think there's no lack of local support for the project.
Now, for investors here who might not understand the black empowerment regime over there, you have a BEE partner?
We do. 33 1/3% of our project is held in a BEE company, which means it's been recognised by the government as black empowered. However, one thing to add there is that the legislation as interpreted by the courts there has come to the, this has been a position that's been sort of evolving over the last 4 or 5 years, and courts have now ruled that the principle of once empowered, always empowered has been endorsed by the courts. And what that means in simple language is that you need a BEE partner at the commencement of your project and grant of your right, but once you're established and your rights granted, that power and empowerment partner is free to sell out. So there was this theory at once that it had to always be empowered. The courts have sort of clarified that now, such that our BEE partner sits there at 33%, but its position is available to be bought back by the company or to be diluted down depending on what they want to do. So there's it's not necessarily something that's going to continue.
You're not really locked in,
for example.
And 33.4, is that higher than mandated?
It is, yeah. The mandated level when we did it was 26%. We were over-empowered because we had a lot of assistance from the black empowerment parties involved in terms of the mining right process and environmental issues and so forth. So they earned their way. They also put some cash into buy in, and they earned their way to that position.
One thing that intrigues me, if this project was in West Africa, the ASX market would be wetting themselves over it. Yet here we are in South Africa, a known mining nation. So if there's still a bit of a discount applied to those West African gold producers because they operate in countries where coups are quite common. I'm just wondering, do you think your share price currently, at least, is carrying a bigger discount than some of those West African gold stocks?
Well, I don't want to give financial advice, but it would appear to be the case. I mean, it's an interesting case study, South Africa. As you mentioned, the countries in West Africa don't want to, they're great projects, but they have had a lot more political instability on an objectively measurable basis over the last 30 to 40 years. I mean, South Africa, people are sometimes surprised to learn, has never had a coup. It's always had democratic systems and processes, and it's quite a robust democracy in many ways. It's evolving. I mean, having the ANC controlling the parliament for the last 30 years is probably not the healthiest state in terms of that sort of dominance. But that's starting to wane, and there's predictions now that they'll go under 50% at the next elections in May. So I think but what's held South Africa in very good stead, from my experience, and I've been going there for 20 years. Consistently, is that they have a very strong, there are other sort of, if you like, institutions of democracy, including the press and the judiciary have been very strong. And, to witness that, you only have to look at the prosecution of Jacob Zuma, the former president, who's been brought down by the press and by the judiciary and is now facing serious charges, even though his own party is still in power. So you can see there that those other arms of the democracy are working very effectively. And I think ultimately the political system will mature when there's more of a multi-party democracy.
And I would assume that the ESG principles are no different to what you find in WA, mine.
They are. They're one thing, South Africa, some people think it's third world. It's not third world, but it certainly has first world principles on environmental, social and governance issues. And, you know, that's one of the reasons it took us quite a time to get our toll treating agreement in place. Our agreement is with a major gold mining and metals mining company there, Sibanye-Stillwater, that most people would know. And Sibanye-Stillwater adhered to very high standards of ESG. So most of our delays were going through that audit process to make sure we were clean, our title was good, the heritage of our position was all clean. And that's what took a while to get that done.
Now, if I just backpedal a bit, just to give people a feel for your market cap is $36.5 million, which I mentioned. Can you remember off the top of your head what some of your key metrics from that Qala Shallows DFS update came out at?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we're producing at an all-in sustaining average cost over the life of mine, which is 17 to 18 years, of $977 US an ounce. So it's very healthy on that front. At our steady state, which we like to refer to as well, because it's important, you know, for 9 or 10 years of that, we're producing at around 70,000 ounces a year. And our steady state cost there at all-in sustaining cost is $871. So it's very, very competitive, with other projects, I think. They're the keys. We produce, as I said, for 17 years. So it's got a long life of mine. It's got a very healthy IRR. It's got a very healthy post-tax NPV of over $255 US at those metrics of $1,850. So at the moment, with the gold price higher, it'd be sitting at over, I'd suggest that the post-tax NPV would now be well north of $330 million. So, you know, if you say that we've got two-thirds of that and we're sitting at a market cap of $36 million Australian, you can see that there's potentially, if you're looking at the NPV metrics, you're saying there's a big value gap there in terms of what the market's saying at the moment. So I think it'll change once we get the funding in place, which I'm confident will happen soon. There will be an inflection point, and I think, you know, it's often hard to pick a change in a market, but I think in this stock you'll see it when the thing gets financed.
Right. And looking further out, perhaps the eventual push to 200,000 ounces, obviously you'll want to bed down the initial project, but how do you see that panning out in years to come, the push to 200?
We've done it. We've done work on. I mean, we have obviously a very big resource. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, there's 4.28 million ounces here, and there's actually more there because originally the historical resource here was a whopping 12.8 million ounces in 2000 when they shut it down at that point. So, and that was under JORC. So it was. So there's a lot more gold there. So it deserves a much larger production run. We were sort of as a small cap saying, let's not bite off too much. Let's get it into production on a, as I said earlier, a modest basis, so we can build progressively to that. We've done preliminary work in terms of we've done a larger scoping study that would be dependent on toll treating externally, and that gets us almost 100,000 ounces. But we've gone back and looked at it in terms of taking it to 200, and that would involve accessing our own plant, either building one or taking over one of the plants in the area. And also we would need to finalise deposition arrangements, which we've had some favourable discussions with the government, the relevant government departments on that as well. And, you know, in this area, there's enormous voids from the historical mining. So basically what we would be doing is depositing the tailings material into the voids that already exist. So we wouldn't be building new tailings dams. We'd be putting them underground. So there's plenty of room. I mean, people go to Johannesburg. It's amazing to see that there's probably, you can, theoretically, you can probably walk 95 kilometres underground across the south of the city. You know, there's that much mining. You said earlier it was 22, I think it's 22% now of the world's gold's come out of there. You know, it used to be about 30%, but obviously with gold mining waning in South Africa, we hope to rebirth it and see it contributing strongly again to the amazing figures.
Now, potential second leg, uranium potential on the leases. What's the story there?
We do, yeah. It's sort of like too good to be true, isn't it, with uranium also making a comeback. We have the Bird Reef package runs through the middle of our lease, just north of the Kimberleys, where we're planning the initial gold project. And the Bird Reef is known and, you know, does carry uranium in certain horizons of it. It also carries gold. You know, part of our global gold resources in those reefs. So we now have the opportunity emerging to actually mine potentially mine gold and uranium at the same time, with the uranium being the principal product in that area and gold being negative cost on it, or vice versa, depending on the price. Now, this can be done as a separate project. The ingress points where we access the Bird Reef are separate to where we're doing the gold mining. So we've done a fair bit of drilling in the past in this area, and we've established an exploration target there of 12 to 16 million pounds already at 300 to 550 ppm. So we think we've designed a new drill program to take that into a resource. It's probably going to cost about $1.5 US, and so we're sort of waiting till we get the gold project started to kick that off, and then we'll be open to looking at ways of monetizing that uranium asset as well. So we think that's a really exciting, I don't know, cream on the top here for people to look at the project.
Absolutely.
And see what's there.
So uranium mining is okay in the Witwatersrand end?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's slowed down a lot in recent years with the whole uranium market slowing down. But, I mean, South Africa, through the latter part of the 20th century, was probably one of the world's largest producers, still has some calcining facilities. And sitting quite near to us is what's called the Cookshaft complex of Sibanye-Stillwater, which has got large uranium reserves and resources. It's on care and maintenance at the moment, but that could easily open up again with uranium. I mean, I can't predict that, but it does look like that's a likely outcome that will go back into production. So we're in the middle of it. I mean, you know, the lease is adjacent to us, which we used to own at Randfontein, on this same Bird Reef system, produced historically 34 million pounds of uranium. So, I mean, the uranium's there. It's not as if they haven't done it before. It's not as well known for its uranium, the Wits Basin, but it's certainly got a lot of uranium in it. I mean, to mine in the Wits Basin, we have to have... you know, we have to have certificates of registration under the National Nuclear Registration System, because some of the material is slightly radioactive.
Interesting one to watch. Yeah. Particularly if this, as some people suggest, the uranium price got to more than $100 a kilo, a pound, and it's come back a bit, but most people seem to assume that it's catching its breath before taking off again. Now that it's seen as part of the solution to global warming, of course.
Sure, and there seems to be a global shortage that the commentators are identifying. I remember this sort of happened in 2005, 2006. South Africa was becoming very much a focus, and Namibia as well, of course, for uranium, with the French down there and a lot of others there, the Americans looking at it. And I think that cycle's probably likely to repeat itself here, and hopefully something like Fukushima doesn't come in the middle of it, which is what actually killed it. But, you know, this has played out before, and with quite a lot of money being made for people that were exposed to uranium in this part of the world.
So we've got two steak knives there. We've got the gold, we've got the uranium, and then in WA we have Mount Cecilia. Interesting project. What's the latest there?
Yeah, Cecilia is obviously a remote project. It's in the Paterson Range, so it's very hot ground. We've got about 225 square kilometres there, about 70 kilometres west of the Winu project, or the Winu discovery that was made by Rio. It's expensive for a small cap like us to mobilise and sustain a program there, as you'd realise. Therefore, a couple of years ago, we entered a JV with Rio, who have a lot of knowledge of our area, because basically our lease is almost surrounded by Rio. They initiated a lot of, we did some aerials then on the ground work, and they've come up with some interesting targets. Rio drilled one of those basically last year, or middle of last year. They came up with the results anyway in the middle of last year, and it actually surprised them. They found we had very long intersections of gold, which wasn't really what Rio focused on. They're focused on more base metals discoveries. So now with the gold price going where it's going, that's sort of having a rethink about what we do with that. And the exploration sort of season is about to open up again then soon, and we're in discussions with them, imminent discussions about what they want to do. They're halfway through their initial earn-in period, which is a $4 million spend for 50% of the project. And that's got another 2 years basically to run, and then they make a decision on whether they want to go to 80%. So we'll have to wait and see on that one, Barry. It's something we're not obviously spending the money on, but we've got a big partner doing it, and it's the sort of project, as I often say to people, it could either make us a $1 billion company or make us nothing. Being in that part of the world, you don't know what's there, but there's certainly something there based on the magnetic surveys and other surveys that were done.
That's the third steak knife in a $36.5 million company. So let's bring it all together, Michael, and just give investors a feel for what are the possible re-rating events in the year ahead.
Well, I think the key two events are going to be, first of all, securing the funding. And I think, as I said, we're well advanced on that. It's difficult for us to say a lot about it because, you know, in terms of people are hungry for updates, but the problem is that, you know, you're under NDAs on most of them, and the ASX in particular don't like you sort of providing sort of tidbits on this sort of stuff because it's seen as pumping. So they're quite firm on. So we're really only announcing things at sort of key moments where there's strategic changes. But at the same time, it is like the proverbial duck. There's a lot of work going on under the water that you can't see, and we're progressing, I think, quite strongly towards that. So that'll be one key event. And then obviously following very quickly off after that will be the commencement of operations and the extraction of ore and processing ore. We'll become a producer, which will be very exciting. Then you've also got, as I said, you know, you mentioned the uranium project as well with Cecilia. So there's lots of things, I think, to look at this company and think it's got a bright future. We've done a lot of work. We're very, very confident in our technical position in terms of the geology and the project. So we will get there. When we get the chance to open this up, we think we can prove this is a much underrated project at the moment. So I suppose the message is don't wait too long because this thing will happen quickly and it'll run quickly. So I would suggest to people that they look at it carefully now and set themselves.
And I'll just make the final point that this is all, two-thirds of the package here is all happening in South Africa, the most stable country you'll find in Africa. So, Michael, fascinating story. A lot to look out for as the year unfolds. So good luck with it all. We'll be watching with interest.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks for your time.
Cheers.